Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 94. A lot of stand-up dates coming up. June 10th in Detroit, June 11th in Dallas, Texas at the Granada Theater, and the Nerdist Podcast live at San Diego Comic-Con. Hashtag SDCC. July 23rd at 8 p.m. at 4th and B. Information for all these shows are at Nerdist.com. Also, pre-order The Nerdist Way, my book, available November 1st. Me. But enough about me and my crap. I would like to thank our returning sponsor, GoToMeeting. If you've ever hosted an online meeting, you know it is a pain in the buns to get meetings started. It is your reputation at stake if anything goes wrong, and GoToMeeting is the easiest and most reliable online meeting service. With GoToMeeting, you start your first meeting in seconds. Everyone can join your meeting in seconds. There's no technical headaches. You're not going to waste time getting things started. It is a web conferencing tool that is the best of the best and the easiest to use. Substantially reduce meeting-related expenses and reduce the overhead in preparing meeting materials. Voice over IP is included. You can just call in via the phone or your computer. GoToMeeting is brought to you by Citrix. Sign up for a free 30-day trial of GoToMeeting. Have all the meetings you want for one low flat rate. That's GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button and enter the promo code Nerdist. And now the Nerdist Podcast, episode number 94, with a very sweet and very delightful Julie Benz.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Just the one air, like real you're tired. Doing a song.
Yeah.
There's a pain in the world.
Just Rick scene.
It doesn't go over my hat.
Can we get those hat?
Can we get the headphones?
The headphones.
Yeah, these might.
Oh my god. That's fine.
I put a bad
Seacrest. Seacrest is going to be so upset.
Oh, there was a Seacrest setting. I just saw him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he shows up in this trail of golden mist.
Yeah.
He appears. His feet don't actually touch the ground.
Yeah. Yeah, and you just hear whispers in the wind.
Buddy.
Bye.
Buddy.
Buddy.
I own your soul.
Doesn't he just, does money just come out of his pores?
Yes, yeah. Yes. If you can,
he spends money. I follow.
If you touch him, he has to take you to his pot of gold.
Yeah.
If you catch him,
yeah. Where does this fit?
I don't know. Where's
the wrong?
You gotta put this thing.
Oh yeah, that's the wrong.
We'll get you some headphones. Yeah. Guys, I think hatphones are a really good idea.
Hatphones, I like it.
Hatphones. Is it gonna work?
Right?
It's not gonna go around the brim.
Okay.
It's not going to fit around the brim.
I can't take the hat off. I have a hat hair now.
Okay, I know.
I'll take it off. Don't.
Oh my
looking,
God,
looking,
you guys.
Not looking.
This is the worst thing that's ever happened on this show. I can't believe it. You know what, though? The headphones will act like a hairband.
And hold
you
the
You look
hair
great. Back. Oh, come on. You look great. What are you talking about? Everything's awful.
Guys, I can't concentrate. It's too much hat hair.
Matthew took his Boston. Matthew took his Boston Red Sox. Okay, here we are. We're all settled. Julie Benz, what a delight to have you on my little podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I am so excited. So here's a little history that you may not remember. I guess maybe 6 months ago, I met JFK and...
Oh my God.
Right? That's the end of the story.
JFK?
Yeah.
I'm at JFK's grave saying, why? Why did it have
this
to happen?
This eternal flame is
Bad
still burning.
Bad things happen to good people. And so... And I'm leaving the airport, and I see you about to go through security. So without really thinking, I just fire a tweet like, hey, there's Julie Benz. You know, she's pretty. I loved Buffy or whatever.
Wow, I don't do that when I see people because I'm not creepy.
And then I just press my face up against the security glass, and I'd have
I'm
to wipe
your
the
sugar
mist.
Bear.
And then I, in my breath mist, I put a smiley face. Mm.
As I remember, they escorted you out.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, they were, and it was escorting.
My version of the
escorting.
Story.
Yeah, they were escorting.
To be fair,
what they do to important people.
To be fair, you also had bombs.
Well, to be fair, yeah, I had this dynamite strapped to my chest, and then I didn't think anything of it. And then months later, I just did a stand-up show in Boston, and I was signing stuff for people afterwards. And this guy's like, "I can't believe Julie Benz tweeted at you." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And so he pulls it up on his phone. And I was like, "Holy shit!"
You don't read your replies, do you?
Well, I get a lot of them, so I try to read them as much as...
I get a lot, too, and I read them all.
Wow.
I done got schooled.
Someone cares about their fans.
The more you know. And so...
Although I only have 100,000. He has 1,000,000.
That is quite a bit much.
And some of those 1,000,000 are actual people. And then a lot of spam
and
bots.
Spam.
A lot of spam bots. Yeah. A lot of porn bots, and people want to sell me vitamins and Xanax and Rolex watches. But... And then I noticed, so I was like, oh, wow, that's interesting. And then I noticed, wait, Julie Benz is following me. No, this is a mistake. Why would she do that? And then,
because you followed me at the airport. Yeah. I like to know what my stalkers are up to.
You physically, in real life, followed her.
I bought another ticket just to go back through security.
Yeah.
No, and so I did a thing, which I normally... I felt really weird about at first. I'm like, she doesn't know me, but I sent you a direct message and just said, hey... I'm not creepy, but I'd love to have you on the
kinda
podcast.
Creepy.
And you,
sort of a little bit.
But I'm not. But there was no like in my mind. I was prepared. If you were like, hey, don't write to me ever again. I'd be like, yeah, done, no problem, totally. But you were very sweet, and so you got me in touch with your publicist, and now you've come on. But you're one of the first people that I didn't really know that I asked to come on the podcast for a year and a half almost. It's just been people I know. So,
like friends?
Yeah, like just friends. Like, yeah, is that what you call them?
So now you're casting a wider net.
I'm casting a wider net to people I like that I wanted to come on. So this is a good experiment. So hopefully, if you have a good time,
you'll invite people you don't know back.
I will start DMing tons of people I don't know. So this is sort of my public apology. I'm sorry for DMing you without really knowing you, but thank
it's
you
okay.
for thank
I
you
followed
for,
you.
Thank you for being kind nonetheless.
I might unfollow you after this.
Yeah. I haven't followed him since episode one. Right after that was done, I just stopped.
Yeah.
Briefs.
But I don't think I cast off a creeper vibe. I'm a pretty nice guy. No. I'm pretty nice, right, Jonah?
Notice their silence.
Sure, yeah.
Right, Jonah? Mr. Hardwick? Sure,
right,
yeah.
Jonah?
Nah, you're a lovable chap.
Good job, right, Jonah?
Yeah, you are, Mr. Hardwick.
Just noticed you got a new car, Jonah. You want to keep that car, right, Jonah?
Yeah, of course I do, Mr. Hardwick. Come on. I got kids.
But it actually put me in a position to actually, you know, because you were coming on and I didn't know you personally, to look up stuff and
oh,
figure
God.
It
Why didn't you just call me?
After I followed you at the airport, I looked you up on the internet.
Mm-hmm. But interestingly, what I want to talk about is you, if you can talk about it,
okay.
If it's not torturous to remember, you were a child figure skater. Is that true?
That is true.
What is that? How is that? What is that lifestyle? My cousin was a figure skater, and her life was not fun at all.
True. It's a lot of work.
When you're a kid, are you like, I want to do that? Or are your parents like, here's some skates, you're going to get out there? And
I was 3 when I started, so I don't think I was going, Mommy, Daddy, I want to be a figure skater. Mm-hmm. I had an older brother and older sister, and they wanted to do it, so I kind of was the tag along.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I could walk at 3. Let alone skate.
Throw on some skates.
My parents thought I had a learning disability at first because I was, you know, they put us in group lessons, and my brother and sister moved through the group lessons very quickly, and I was still in group 1. Now, remember, I was 3, but I realized that I was cute, and everybody would push me around. So I never actually learned how to, I didn't have to learn how to skate. So for 9 months, I was in group 1 until my parents kind of told everybody, do not touch her, do not push her around, she has to learn.
Oh, that's horrible.
So then I learned.
I think it's funny that just the idea of like, yeah, this 3-year-old's got a learning disability. He can't read the newspaper. Yeah, this is 3 years
old. I think it proved that I know how to, that I was actually pretty smart, that I realized that people would push me around.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Can't let people push you around all your life, Julie. Can't let it happen.
It has to end right here. Guys, stop pushing her around. Stop following her at airports. Now, I do want to point out, I didn't follow you. I just saw you.
All right,
and
Chris,
kept walking
okay.
where I was going.
Yeah, you kept walking.
As I remember, you encouraged them to search me, and then you proceeded to stare.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's the story I remember.
Yeah, I wasn't taking video. I just was holding my phone up because I was looking at the internet. I was just looking at the internet online. Do you have to travel a ton?
I do. I mean, I do. Just for fun.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, what is traveling for fun like? I only ever travel for work.
Well,
you have to travel for fun?
Yes. No, I love to travel. I love to travel. When I travel for fun by myself, like on my own, I travel and coach. I like traveling for work because you're usually in first class.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The three up there. And yes. It's all snazzy.
Yes.
I got to tell you, though, I'm one of those stupid people that I will just pay for first class anyway because I can't. I just hate being sandwiched in a middle seat.
Yeah.
The last time it happened, I was next to a biker, and then I just had this giant steaky elbow in my neck for 5.5 hours.
I told you I'd move it.
You've lost a lot of weight, to be fair.
I had a terrible flight home from Paris. My boyfriend and I went to Paris over Christmas, and on the flight home, and then we were sitting in coach, and in the worst seats in coach, like in the way, way back by the bathroom.
Yeah.
And on the way home, he proceeded to get really ill and was vomiting, and I had to borrow people's barf bags. And at on the plane, they were showing my Desperate Housewives episode. And so I'm asking for barf bags, and people are asking for my autograph.
Oh, no.
And my poor boyfriend is throwing up all over the plane.
Yeah. Will you sign my barf bag?
Yeah. Sure. You just hear, oh, in the back. What was that? Don't worry about it.
I look like so cheap. Like, we were in the worst seats to coach. It was awful.
Thanks for the autograph.
I'm so sorry. Oh, you can keep the bag.
Sorry, things aren't doing well for you.
What happened? What happened? Did he get food poisoning or was
it a
bug?
No, he got the flu.
Oh, man.
How long is that flight?
It was long. It was like 10 hours.
Oh, it was
really bad. And, you know, but he tried to act like it wasn't so, like he wasn't in so much pain, but it's hard to ignore throwing up.
Yeah. I'm fine. Wretch.
Yeah. What was that? Nothing.
I had that on a plane once. It is not awesome to travel when you have to throw up.
It started as soon as we started taking off is when it started. Oh. And he just looked at me and he was like, this is going to be the longest flight of my life.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It's painful.
I had that on a flight to St. Louis once, and I had to swap seats so I could get the aisle seat. And then the cart was coming down the aisle, and the stewardess gave me this sort of curt, like, can you please sit back down? And all I could do was make this motion with my fingers and my mouth and just like exploding finger motion. And her whole demeanor changed.
Yes.
Instantly backed up. And then I spent the next couple hours in a tiny laboratory.
That's how I'm going to get through a crowded bar from now on.
Just do this. Yeah. But he's okay now. Everything's fine.
He recovered.
Oh, good.
The flu at Christmas.
Did it stop the second you landed? He's like, oh, I feel better now.
No, he was sick for a couple days.
It's because Paris is dirty.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, Paris is dirty. It's fun dirty, but it's dirty.
It's dirty.
Yeah. They got a lot of weird stuff. Are you shooting right now or are you off?
No, I'm off.
Oh, that's nice.
I'm actually on vacation right now.
That's great.
It's great.
What else are you going to do?
I'm going to go to Puerto Rico on Thursday for a charity event. And then I'm going to go to the Kentucky Derby next week.
I was born in Louisville. I love the Kentucky Derby.
Oh, you're going to wear a big hat?
Two big hats.
Yeah.
And drink mint jubilees.
Yes.
And fan yourself.
Mint jubilee or a mint tulip?
A mint tulip.
Not a mint jubilee.
A mint jubilee.
I have made a slight mod to mine. It contains...
It's a mint virgin. It's a virgin.
Yeah.
Virgin mint jubilee. It's
not
a German julep.
I'm not doing a virgin julep.
No. Okay. Yeah. Good to know.
I'm going to have the hardcore one.
Yeah.
With the mint.
Yeah, just have a mint drink. The Derby's great. Have you been before?
I've never been.
Oh, it's so exciting.
I'm really excited.
Churchill Downs.
I know.
There's just horses running around in a circle, right?
Yep.
And you get to gamble on them. You get to bet.
Oh, there it is.
It's like NASCAR, but you can abuse the cars. it's like pretty fun.
It's really sad when they put down the cars, though.
Yeah, it really is.
Right out of the prime, put out the pasture.
A car throws a tire. They just shoot it.
Yeah, they put it out the parking lot.
Yeah, my parents were all friends with horse trainers when I was growing up, so I just spent tons of time on fields shoveling horse shit now that I remember it.
It sounds like a blast.
I'm going to have the same experience.
Come around back. Are you getting the full-on VIP treatment? Or are they taking you through? Oh, that's the way to do it.
I'm very excited.
That's awesome. So you're on vacation now. When do you guys go back?
For No Ordinary Family?
Yeah.
I don't know if we're going back.
What?
I know. Our numbers were terrible.
Really?
Yeah. We're kind of under the bubble. I don't even want to say we're on the bubble. We're a little under the bubble, according to TV Guide this week.
Oh, thanks, TV Guide. Write whatever you want. We're not human beings with feelings.
Whatever your numbers were, they were better than the Paul Reiser show.
But, you know, it's sad. I think our show appeals to an audience that watches shows in different mediums, like not necessarily the old way of watching television where the ratings system occurs. I mean, I think we have a hipper audience that, you know, watches it on Hulu and iTunes, and those numbers are fantastic for us, and our foreign numbers are great. So I just think that we just have a hipper audience, and unfortunately, the rating system is still very antiquated and doesn't really take in, I mean, they barely take in the DVR numbers, you know?
Yeah, that's a weird thing. And the Nielsen boxes, or the way they do the ratings, are still Nielsen, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Nielsen
do
Media.
They only give them to families, or do they give them to, like, single dudes, single girls?
I think they probably parse out the demographic, but the problem is that there's...
You'd be surprised at how... I mean, there's just a minimal amount of boxes.
Like 1,000.
Something like that. Yeah, yeah. I think it's like 10,000 or something for all of America. Like, that's how they
it's
get
archaic.
The ratings.
It's archaic. It's like a real old way.
It is, but I think they did an experiment one year where they actually tracked what people were really watching, and the networks were like, you can't ever do this again, because you know what they realized is that, I mean, the networks would take a bath if you actually tracked what people are watching. And DVR, they can't take into account because advertisers don't like the idea that you can skip through the ads.
Yeah, and they won't, I mean, iTunes and Hulu, I mean, they won't ever reveal what those numbers are for real.
No, so, which is crazy, because that is...
That's the new medium. That's new media. That's like how we're going to be watching television in probably 5 years.
And I think that's important for advertisers, because there are product placements in shows. So it's unfortunate that we're still holding on to a time when there were three channels and, you know, it was easy to track whatever was watching.
DuPont Network.
Yeah, exactly. Colgate presents.
Sponsored by Kingston Smokes. Kids love them. We kind of suffer from that at G4 a little bit, where it's, you know, like so much of our programming is DVR'd. And they're like, you can't count that though. You're like, but
people are watching it. Yeah. And, you know, I get stopped so much about the show and by a giant cross section of different types of people that love it and watch it. And it just is shocking to me that our ratings were, you know, we were in a really tough time slot too. Tuesday night at 8 is the toughest time slot in television.
Yeah.
Because we're up against Glee, NCIS, which is a monster.
Yeah.
And Biggest Loser, you know, three well-established shows. And then they, you know, we were a freshman show. Our lead-in was Wheel of Fortune. I mean,
it's weird though, because what sucks is that they, you know, networks are not in the business anymore of like fostering programming. It's just like, we talked about this on one of the last podcasts, the Paul Reiser show. They were like, oh, this show's coming out. Oh, we canceled it. They're like, oh, you just gave it 2 episodes.
But I don't think they can anymore because of, you know, the networks are all owned now by these giant conglomerates. And so they have, you know, they have to answer to bigger people. And so they have to prove that they're bringing in numbers and, it's not like it used to be where, you know, they were more independent and didn't have these, you know, big brothers. I mean, they're a small part of a bigger corporation.
Yeah. And it's all like, and they're all essentially run by the marketing departments now. I mean, they used to be run by people who headed up creative programming, and now it's all run by marketing.
That is starting to change with Paul Lee taking over ABC, and he comes from a producing background, and with Bob Greenblatt taking over NBC, and he comes from a producing background as well, and also ran Showtime for when I was there. You know, they're both very creative as far as like their backgrounds. So I think that we're going to see more of a change in the leadership of networks.
Yeah, it would be nice, because there's this insane renaissance television period going on in cable. And, you know, there's a handful of shows on network television that you're like, oh, there's actually a good show. And then the rest of it is just networks trying to scramble as hard as they can to throw weird competition shows on to get people to watch them. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen.
There is a shift going on, though. I mean, they canceled, was it All My Children and
Days of Our Lives?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's kind of a big deal that I think will shake start, you know, going towards, you know, later times.
I'm surprised those shows lasted as long as they did.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Well, because why would you watch fake dramatization when you can watch semi-reality dramatization?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's, you know.
It'll be weird not having, you know, I mean, I grew up watching all my children, and it'll be odd not having Susan Lucci on.
It's like what you would have to watch when you're homesick from school. Yes. Like game shows, and then you'd be like, well, that's just on.
Yeah, right after Price is Right. Like, well, yeah. I guess I'm into soaps.
Yeah.
And you had All My Children, One Life to Live, and the General Hospital, and then you had, like, the reruns of all the sitcoms and all that other stuff coming at 4 o'clock. Yeah, then you had 70s. Oprah, and then after that.
Yeah.
And Oprah's going. 22 more episodes left.
Oh, that's it?
I don't think I'm going to be able to survive.
But she's going to her network, though, right?
But she's not doing, like, a daily show anymore, though. Like, if anything, it's going to be weekly, right? Or just specials?
I guess. Yeah. And I realized, like, my dream of being in the audience for, like, her big gift shows is, like, I'll never be in that audience.
What? Right. You still have 22 opportunities left. You have all this vacation time. What are you doing? Get to Chicago.
I'm sure those have been booked for a decade.
Oprah's favorite things.
Her favorite things. I mean, I'm never going to sit in that audience. It's like...
Yeah.
Boy, I can't
ever go,
you get a car. You get a car.
It's sort of hard to blame Oprah, though. It's like, I have $1 billion. Why am I doing a show every freaking day?
Because she can't. Cares.
I know.
She cares, Chris.
Well, who's going to remember my spirit if I don't have Oprah? If I don't have Oprah anymore. It's not too late. You have 22 weeks left. Write a book. Take it on Oprah and be an author. That's what you got to do. You got 22 weeks.
No. It's a daily show, right?
It's a daily show.
Yeah. So.
Oh, 22 episodes.
Yeah. 22 episodes.
Oh, shit. That's going to be harder. Yeah. It only gives you like 6 weeks.
I can maybe like develop a bad drug problem, go into rehab, recover.
Quick.
Then write a book and then get on the show.
Does anyone have any heroin or barbiturates?
Hurry up.
We're gonna get on this.
You're gonna have to do all of them at the same time. Write your book while going through heroin and into the book.
The heroin's gonna help you get through the book writing process, and then the speed will keep you awake. What kind of stuff did you like growing up? Did you like any nerdy stuff, or what kind of shows did you watch? What did you like?
I don't know what nerdy stuff is because I'm not a nerd. No, I mean when I was little, I loved Star Wars. I loved all the Star Wars movies.
Pretty nerdy,
I guess.
Pretty sweet.
But I was really young when they came out, and I remember my parents took us to see the original Star Wars, and I thought if we exited the movie theater from behind, you know, by behind the screen, you know how you used to be able to exit like into the parking lot. Although I didn't know it was the parking lot, I thought we were going to meet the actors. and I guess I had been bad that day, and so my parents led me to believe that I was going to meet the actors. And when we got out to the parking lot, they said, "Oh, because you were bad today, they went home." And I was devastated.
So from that day on, you were like, I'm going to do whatever I can in my life to meet those actors.
Yes.
Was this little girl behaved? No, I'm sorry then. Darth Vader.
I really wanted to meet R2-D2.
Warwick Davis.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a sad but adorable story. Yeah. So were you extra good at every other movie? And you're like, I haven't fucking met anyone yet. What's
going on?
It took
me a while to catch on that they weren't really behind the screen. I used to crawl behind. I used to be the kid that would crawl behind the TV set and look to see where the actors were inside the TV. Mm-hmm. Like I, you know,
That earlier story about your parents thinking you're slow. Starting to make a little more sense.
I did stuff like that.
I was a very imaginative kid.
That's really odd. It's like they're in the front, but they're not in the back. What's going on? Yep, that's adorable. And then it was like...
Remember that you could look through the holes and then you see all these lights?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And then look through the little holes in the TV. And I mean, I'm showing my age, obviously. Half your audience is like, God, how old is she? Yeah.
You turn the knob and we're like, knob? I don't understand.
I can assure you, you're younger than I am. So I reference shit all the time that people are like, what? What's Chico and the Man? Different Strokes.
Oh, I love that show.
You remember Different Strokes?
I do.
You're
reruns.
A kid.
I have reruns of it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Reruns. Yeah. Reruns.
Just like how you like know. Reruns. Just like how you would know about I Love Lucy.
I don't comprehend. I don't understand what you're talking about.
No, that was
rerun. What's a rerun?
I feel like there's this whole generation of people that does not know I Love Lucy, The Flintstones.
Gilligan's Island.
But I think, Bewitched.
I think kids watch so much TV growing up that they end up seeing all this stuff. They all, you know, because
yeah,
I watched
on anymore.
Nick at Night.
What? It's not on anywhere anymore.
What is it?
Nick at Night now shows Home Improvement.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. They start the George Lopez show or like
really?
Yeah. They've moved on.
What?
Wow.
I'm sorry. Do you need a minute? Yeah. Need a minute yourself? Don't touch me.
I just need a second.
That's
horrible.
Home Improvement. Yeah.
Those are culturally relevant shows that change the perspective of a lot of people. Like. Yeah. All in the family. Like,
shut up, old man.
No, but this is like, what did Home Improvement? I watched it every episode, but it's not. It didn't do anything.
Jonah, here's the thing. As a guy, when you go into a hardware store, you turn into an ape. That's the series. I was a huge Buffy fan, and I didn't watch Buffy in its original run, but I did that thing like 5 years ago where I got the box set and just watched all of them.
Wow.
In like a 2 month period.
Wow.
Because Joss and I used to be neighbors.
Oh, cool.
When he was doing Buffy, and I never knew the show. I mean, I wasn't watching the show at the time. So I was like, "Oh, have good luck with your vampire show."
And then Fun Stormy the Castle.
And then years later,
are you still living there? And he's like, "Now it's a mansion."
Joss. This was years ago. I lived in Brentwood. I'll never live on the West Side again.
Didn't he like buy a bunch of houses in the neighborhood and then just keep building onto them?
When I first moved into the house across the street from him, there was construction because there were two houses that had been raised, and then he was building a mega house between the two of them. Someone was like, "That was a guy who wrote Toy Story, and he's right. He's doing a show called Buffy." I'm like, "Oh, okay." And then that house was really nice, so it's possible he may have owned the entire block.
Yeah. He probably does by now. Or he owns a block somewhere else.
But can I tell you?
He owns Brentwood.
He might own Brentwood. Yeah. But the other
OJ
fun,
was the last one he had to get
but out. But that's the thing. We lived right around the corner from the OJ, alleged
Bundy.
Yeah. I used to live in Brentwood.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
So Monica Lewinsky's father lived at the end of our street.
Ooh.
Like four doors down from Joss.
Wow.
And so when that all broke, there was a period of a month where there were literally reporters sleeping on people's lawns.
Wow.
Just waiting to shove a camera in this poor guy's face.
Hey, you reporter, get off my lawn.
You dumb crazy reporter.
Did you give him lemonade?
Did you set up a lemonade stand? No, because I wanted them to be thirsty because what they were doing was horrible.
Yes.
How do you feel about your daughter and these horrible sexual acts with the commander in chief?
And the dress.
Yeah,
so your daughter blew the president.
Yeah. I got to get back on a train and go back to Chicago.
Chicago and reporters there. It was weird.
It's Bill from the Chicago Tribune. Hi, your daughter blew that guy, huh?
You smoke a lot of cigars when she was a baby? Come on. Why are you talking like that? So how did you get involved with Buffy? Was it just a traditional, like, here's a call, you're going to audition?
Yeah, I mean, I originally auditioned for the role of Buffy,
mm-hmm.
but at the time I was about 5 years too old to play Buffy, but that's how I met Joss. And he really liked my choices and like what I was doing with the character. And he offered me to play Vampire Girl Number One. and I said, okay. And Vampire Girl Number One turned into Darla and turned into the whole thing. So.
Such a fun character.
Oh, she was fantastic.
You must have had a great time working
on that
show.
I loved playing her. I mean, she was 400 years old, and she was just so, like, epic. And every week they challenged me. I had to do, you know, ride a horse through fire or get buried alive. I had to sing. I mean, and I don't sing, and I had to sing. And, you know, I was always being challenged in some way. And they just wrote me such great storylines that I loved it. I loved playing her.
Did you kind of have an idea? Like at a certain point, they must have said, "Okay, you're gonna recur on the show, or you're a regular cast member on the show."
I never really had any idea.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And every time I would die, because I died like 9 times or something, and every time I died, I thought it was over. I would be crying. I'd be saying goodbye to everybody, and they'd be like, "Oh, you're back next week."
It's like, a fantasy show. We could do whatever we want.
Yeah. So, but it was fun. I mean, I never really knew where the story was going. I don't even think they knew. I mean, Joss was, you know, literally writing the scripts as we were going along. There were days where we didn't even have scripts. We just had scenes.
Holy crap.
So, it was great training ground, and it was a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
It's like a roller coaster ride.
Because you shot that in sort of Santa Monica, right?
Buffy was shot in Santa Monica, and then Angel was shot at Paramount.
Oh, okay. Angel was a little more. Angel probably was a little more of a production than Buffy was in the beginning, right? Because it was. Josh was pretty established by that point.
It was, but I mean, they still didn't have their scripts.
Well, because at that time, Josh, I think he was writing. He was writing Buffy, Angel, and Serenity, and Firefly.
Yeah, I mean, he does everything, and he's very hands on. I mean, he approves everything that you see on camera, from like wardrobe fittings to everything. I mean, that's what I think is so great and why the show was so fantastic is he had such a vision of what it was he was creating, mm-hmm. and was very involved. Even when he was off doing other things, he was still very involved in what was being created, and nothing was done without his approval, and you always felt his presence.
Yeah.
And so many other shows don't have that. You know, when your leader leaves, you feel like you're drowning. So
yeah.
He just had such great vision, and he hired an amazing team. I mean, we had Tim Minear, who was, you know, writing on Angel, and he was fantastic, and David Greenwald. And so he hired the best writers to come in and be his backup team, and they were fantastic.
Yeah, and the thing that's so refreshing about a show like Buffy, because Buffy came around when television was not in a good state,
right,
at all. And so to see like a young guy helming a show, and with each episode, you really feel how much he cares about the universe he's created and the attention to detail.
He would get so excited. He'd be like, he would get a little boy, get so excited and just infuse like all his enthusiasm. Like it would just be catching, and he'd just be excited too, because he was so excited about the story or something that he was going to do. And like, it was just so, you know, this youthful, boyish energy that he has. It's just, you know, it was contagious.
That's so great. And hopefully the business hasn't squashed that out of him by now. Now he's
doing
the Avengers. Better be good.
He's doing the Avengers.
He's doing
right?
the Avengers. Yeah,
that's fantastic.
If the Avengers is not good, it's not going to be because of Joss.
No,
it's going to be because a studio did a weird test screening somewhere and they're like, Adam, this.
Yeah,
but because that guy's awesome.
They're redoing Buffy without Joss.
I know. I don't know how you do that.
I can't.
I don't think the fans are going to take too kindly to that.
No.
I think you have a whole generation of new fans.
Because Joss. No.
Pretty soon Buffy's going to be on Nick at Night. Yep. And then. Yeah.
Joss is the head vampire. Like, you can't go into that clan and not have the guy who.
Yeah, but I think there's so many tweens who like love Twilight but have yet to see Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
And those tweens who love Twilight will not get the irony of Buffy.
If it's done that way.
What if it's done like the Vampire Diaries or some shit?
Oh, God. Oh, I need a barf bag.
I'll get one for you.
Please, yeah. You still have some? Yes, people gave us a
stack. Can you sign this barf bag?
That could be your thing. Like, when you go do signings and stuff, you just sign barf bags. It's just like an inside joke that you have. You know, the original, the Buffy movie totally holds up still, too. Have you seen the movie lately?
You know, I never saw the movie because Joss was never really proud of the movie.
Really?
Yes, that's why he did the television show. He wasn't really involved. I mean, he wrote the script, but he wasn't involved in like the final product, and so that's why he did the show. And he always told us not to watch it, so I never watched it.
Too bad. I think it's a great movie, and I think it was the first, because you know, coming out of 90210, watching like Luke Perry, and you're like, yeah. Oh, he's not a tool. Like, he's actually kind of funny.
And Paul Rubens
is mind-blowingly hilarious in it. Yeah, that's so funny how people get in their own heads about whatever they're creating, because I think the original movie was, I mean, the show was much more in depth and certainly much more intense of a ride, but the original movie's pretty good.
I saw it in the theater.
You did?
Yeah,
me too.
How many times?
Oh, just once.
I saw that once. I saw Clueless three times.
Afterwards, did you go back and meet Christy Swanson afterwards?
Yeah, behind the screen.
I was actually really good that day, so the actor stuck around.
So you got to see Luke Perry. Hey, kiddo, I'm 42. I'm playing a teenager.
Thanks, Luke.
How'd that work?
I think that's why I decided to become an actor, because I thought that, you know. You had to be behind. Yeah. Think of the amount of work you had to do. Every theater you had to be behind.
That's your book title, Going Behind the Screen with Julie Benz.
You just want to hang out behind theaters. This is a fan of it.
That's weird.
Now you can't exit in the back anymore.
No, the multiplexes, you can't.
It's no fun. Mm. So fun. Do you see anything lately? Like, do you see anything good lately?
I'm terrible. I don't go to the movies.
Me neither.
So
that's why I was asking. I was just looking for a good suggestion.
No, I mean, I saw The King's Speech.
Yeah.
And I loved it. So
did they fix his stutter?
Yeah, they did.
Okay, good. End. I didn't see it.
You know the ending now.
Spoilers. The end. Are you gonna get up at 3 a.m. and watch the royal wedding?
You know what? I would if I was going to be here, but I'm going to be in Puerto Rico.
So. Oh, they probably don't care as much.
Yeah. I might DVR it, though.
It could, that's what you got to do.
Yeah.
But then, of course, the royal family's not going to get to capitalize on the advertiser because exactly. You DVR'd it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of excited. At first, I wasn't. And now, like, this week, I'm kind of like, all the hype, I'm like, ooh, this is so exciting.
Is it fun? Like, I'm trying to...
There's death threats against them.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
I mean, that's exciting.
They might get shot during...
Yeah. I mean, you have to really want to marry the guy. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if there's death threats... walking down the aisle is tough enough. I did it once.
Not with freaking snipers.
I can't even imagine if there's, like, death threats. Like,
yeah, she's really got him on to marry that prince.
You know what, though? You say that, but I guarantee you that those people's lives are not fun at all. Like, they have to live in this weird...
pageantry.
Sociological prison where they have to follow rules.
But I think it's changing. I think that with the younger generation, I think they're changing it. Like, I think Prince Charles probably had to live with all of that, and hence all the issues.
Right.
Yeah. But I think with Prince William and Prince Harry, like, they seem, like, hipper and, like, more, I don't know, a little more in touch with what's going
on.
What
can they do as a prince? Are you just kind of, is it just... almost like having a reality show where it's just like, well, you're a celebrity, so here, appear at this thing and support this thing. And
I don't quite understand the monarchy system. It's so antiquated. I don't really know if they have much political power at all.
I think they can really help influence charities and,
yeah,
and charitable.
Well, that's what
work.
Princess,
and I think
that's what
Princess Di did.
Yeah, she just used her notoriety to.
And I know, like, Prince Harry recently went to visit a bunch of soldiers that came back from Afghanistan and Iraq, and, you know, like, he's very big in that. Like, they're definitely...
Took him to Ibiza.
Yeah.
they call it Ibiza.
Ibiza.
Yeah, they call it Ibiza over there. Yeah.
But I'm actually kind of... I mean, I want to see what her dress... I want to know if she's going to wear a long dress. Remember Princess... I watched Princess Diana's wedding. I woke up... This was before TiVo.
I did because of my mom.
Exactly. My mom woke us up. We got up. We watched it. The dress was gorgeous. It was... is Kate going to wear, like, a long dress like that?
That's what's so interesting. You know, it is interesting from the standpoint.
It's such a girly moment.
Yeah. it is a little bit of a girly moment. But because in the 80s, it was okay to be overtly opulent. And
yes,
now. You know, now that we're in a financial crisis.
Well, it turns out they're taking cars over there. They're not even taking horse-drawn golden carriages.
Oh, really?
Can you believe it?
I know, right? No, you know what's really funny? They showed footage of the bridesmaids walking down the aisle in Princess Diana's wedding, and they all looked miserable. Like, miserable. Like, none of them are smiling.
No, that's just British people.
I mean, I hope people are smiling.
I think that's just British people. They don't like to emote a whole lot. They keep it all.
Are you happy for Queen and Country?
Yes.
But are you happy for Queen and Country?
Yes, I'm ecstatic at the moment. Can't you feel my youthful exuberance? do you ever go to London much? Do you get to go over to England?
I've been there quite a few times, yeah.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Yeah. Have you?
Yeah, I haven't been since 2001.
Wow.
I know.
9/11.
I know. Oh. No, it was actually right around there. I used to I quit drinking like 8 years ago, and I think
sorry.
I've always I know.
I'm sorry.
Got your life together.
Do you want some more scotch? So I always think in the back of my head, like, yeah, but the fun part about London when I was there the last time was, like, I'm drinking in the Natural History Museum, at the Darwin exhibit. But I don't know now.
No, they've become like, I mean, you can't smoke everywhere anymore there. I mean, it's nice.
It is nice.
Yeah.
All right, maybe I'll go back. I want to go see the Doctor Who experience. It just got silent. Just got really silent.
You too, Chris.
You could, we just had some friends go. They said it was really amazing.
Yeah.
Do you do a lot of cons? Do you get to go a lot of the Comic Cons? You went to Icon, right?
I did. I was at
in Long
Icon,
Island.
In Long Island.
How was it?
It was good. It was good. It was fun. They're always fun.
It is nice. And I would imagine that, I mean, the nerds adore you.
I know.
It's so nice.
It's nice.
And they're sweet. It's of all the fan groups you could have, they're the nicest.
What I really love about how my career has kind of happened unexpectedly is that being involved in all these genre shows, the fan base is so loyal. I mean, they'll follow you anywhere. And that's what I love. And that's why I do the conventions. I like meeting the fans and continuing their support. Begging for their support.
Is it hard, though?
So I can continue to work.
Yes.
Is it hard, though, sometimes where they want to talk about stuff more general and like a nerdy general thing where there's like, oh, well, did you also see, you were in Buffy, so did you see this vampire thing and know about that? Do they expect you to know about the whole genre?
You know, they do ask those questions, and I'm very honest about what I know about and what I don't know about. You know, so
you said I'm an actress that did a really good job in the show you like.
Yeah. And then, who would want to know about that? No.
Do you still have the vampire forehead appliance?
Also,
no, actually,
question.
That's me without makeup on.
No.
No, it really is.
I don't believe you.
Oh, trust me.
I don't believe you for a second.
It's true. Yeah.
Second question, what's your technique?
I've seen you without a hat.
Oh,
everything's good.
We weren't going to talk about that.
I know, I'm so sorry. Well, this is an audio podcast. No one's going to.
You saw the top of my head.
That's where the energy.
Please, look at us. We're just a ragtag group of dorks thrown together.
Pretty much.
Barely. I'm mildly presentable today.
Yeah.
I almost dressed up, and I was like, that's going to be too weird. Because I didn't want, you know, I wanted to think like, oh, we're professionals here. And I'm like, I dress up.
Yeah. You should have dressed up.
She'll just think we're semi-professional.
You should have dressed up.
I should have dressed up. Really, weird if you showed up and I was in a top hat and tails.
No, it would have been nice.
Oh, shit. I knew it. I was at Starbucks across the street writing a book, and I have to do edits now, which is awful. But and I was at a table next to a guy who was wearing tap shoes. Tap shoes at a Starbucks. Suit, bow tie, tap shoes.
Huh.
Hmm. Where was he going?
I don't know, but just...
Did you sit down and talk to him?
I didn't. I was afraid to, but every time he got up, you would just hear the click, 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 click.
Like, real tap dancers don't wear their tap shoes out.
What?
No, they just get their sneakers with the bottle caps on the toe and heel.
In the bathroom is a hog-tied tap dancer.
That must be the case.
He stole his clothes and tap dance.
Also, he had a suitcase. And he unzipped the suitcase and pulled out a bag of cantaloupe.
Really?
He's living weird.
All right.
Really?
Yeah.
That sounds like you made it up.
Nope, this is all totally true.
Wow.
He's one of those guys where you're like, I don't think you're homeless, but there's something at play.
But you don't go home a lot.
Right.
Your home is weird.
There's not a place. How have you found Twitter so far? Are you enjoying it? You have a shitload of followers. And
not as many as you.
No, but that's not, listen, I'm weird.
They're all fake.
Yeah, they're all fake. Mine are all fake.
No, I love Twitter. I love the... First, I think in 140 characters, that's about as much as I can write. So it's perfect for someone like me.
Yeah, your parents tell us about that.
and it's great. I can, you know, be silly and fun and share my weird observations about life. And then I can also do good and do a lot for charities and also try to, you know, change the world if I can.
Yeah. So what are some of the charities you're working with now?
Well, I've been doing a lot with the Humane Society and the ASPCA.
Nice.
I don't know if about Patrick. You know about Patrick the miracle dog in New Jersey?
Oh yes. The dog they euthanized and then he.
No. This is another dog. Patrick was chained to a floor and starved to death basically by his owner, and then thrown 19 stories down a garbage chute.
Jeez.
And the garbage man, as he was picking up the garbage, noticed a bag moving. Opened the bag and there was like basically a skeleton of this dog, and he was still. He was barely alive, and they took him to the ASPCA and they revived him. And he's been at this amazing vet hospital outside of Newark in Tinton Falls. And he's had to have surgery and he's gained like 33 pounds now.
Oh, wow.
And when I was just recently in New York, I actually went to visit him because I'm so moved by, I mean, the biggest issue is this woman. She's going to be sentenced on May 6th. She basically faces 18 months in prison.
Fuck yeah.
That's it. I mean, that's the maximum sentence. And New Jersey has the worst animal cruelty laws. And so there's this petition online that I've been encouraging people to sign. And also they could tweet the senator and the mayor, Cory Booker, as well, to force them to make a change. I mean, this woman needs 5 years. It needs to be a felony. I mean, yeah. it's severe animal cruelty.
Yeah, and also, I've always been a supporter of we need to control the animal populations.
Like spayed or neutered.
Spayed or neutered, like Bob Barker said. Like when I'm having, this is gonna make me sound weird, if I haven't achieved that at this point. If I'm out and I see someone walking their dog and I notice that the dog still has balls, I'm like, what are you doing? You need to fix your animal. Like, there are too many.
Weird to look at.
Yeah. Right. I don't follow.
They usually hump your leg, too.
Right? Yeah.
I always get thrown off. I was talking to someone recently. They're like, yeah, my cat's going crazy. It's in heat. I'm like, why isn't it fixed? Right. Which makes me like, it's like a political or religious conversation came up. I'm like, why didn't you do the right thing?
Oh, you know what's going to happen, though? It's just going to be some weird sort of Rod Serling Twilight Zone irony. Some alien race is going to come down and start castrating humans.
I don't see anything.
Why haven't you castrated your human yet?
I don't see anything wrong with
that. I couldn't help but notice his testicles. We won't be able to be clothed. We'll just be treated like animals. God damn it! It's coming. It's coming around. So, which website should people go to follow the charity?
I mean, you can go to the ASPCA, and any of their websites has information on Patrick. There's also a Facebook page, and the name is Patrick the Miracle Dog.
Okay.
And also on my Twitter at Julie Benz, I tweet a lot about animal rights and getting these severe cruelty cases. I mean, because when you own a dog, the dog is dependent on you to feed it. And and if you let it starve to death, I mean, that's just cruel. I mean, if you can't take care of a pet anymore, do the right thing. Take it to the ASPCA. Take it to a no-kill shelter. Find a home for it.
Right.
Like, don't just let it die in front of you.
I know. Well, unfortunately, I think, you know, I feel like I go through this sometimes where you would look at someone like that and go, but it's so obvious. You just have to feed the... And then you kind of realize, like, oh, yeah, they're not, there are a lot of other areas of that person's life that are being neglected as well. They're not all here.
But the dogs would have a better chance if they just, like, put it outside of their home and the dog would find something better. That's the thing that always weirds me out about these people. They keep it.
There was a 19-year-old boy recently, him and his girlfriend they bought a 3-month-old boxer puppy and decided that it was too much to take care of. And so they kept him in his cage in their kitchen and let the dog basically starve to death, and it died at 5 months old. Jeez. Now, he's facing 3.5 years in jail because it's in Wisconsin and they have tougher laws, which, you know, and she's also facing criminal time. But it's like, and they left the dog on the sidewalk after it was dead. Like,
I couldn't take care of my black lab, so I gave it to a family with a 12-year-old in a giant yard. So that's what I did.
Yeah.
You're a thoughtful, sensitive human being.
A lot of people in this world are dicks. It's so much easier, but the people don't do that. And I don't like the fact that people still get stuff from kennels or, you know, breeders.
I mean, there's also the whole puppy mill issue and overbreeding. And we don't need to breed more dogs. We have plenty.
More than enough. Go to any shelter and you'll find, a lot of pit bulls. But there's also a lot of other kinds of dogs. But pit bulls are awesome. Pit bulls can be the sweetest dogs in the world.
Until they rip your 5-year-old's face off.
Yep.
You know, it's not the breed. It's the owner.
Exactly.
And
if your dog's neurotic, that means you're neurotic.
I have a little Morkie. He's a Maltese Yorkie mutt, and he tries to attack pit bulls. I mean,
That's adorable. How big is he? Is he tiny,
he's like
tiny 10 pounds.
Yeah. I think he thinks he's protecting me, but he attacked a pit bull one day. I mean, pit bull looked at him like, "What the hell are you doing?
This motherfucker's crazy." So, how long have you had? How long? What's your dog's name?
He's Bamboo. Uh-huh. And he's 4. And then I have a little white Havanese, and her name's Sugar, and she's 2.
Oh, my mom had a Havanese.
They're great.
Loved it.
She's stubborn.
Yes.
They got attitude.
Yeah, this one, my mom.
They're Cuban. They're from Cuba.
So they have a little bit of the...
They got a little bit of that Latin, attitude, you know what
You
I mean?
Not tell me. I tell you how it goes.
Exactly.
Yeah, my mom's dog talked. Did I mention that? It was a talking dog. Yeah, she had this dog it was a rescue, and you know, my mother is so maternal. Like, she just... You know, personally, I think there needs to be a little bit clearer lines between my mom and her dogs, but she like feeds them from the table you know, like does that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so they're a little spoiled.
Yeah.
But this dog was really sweet until, I don't know what happened to her when she was in the shelter, but if she felt that your hand was coming near her neck, she would.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You get a little bite in the hand.
Yeah, I knew a dog like that. If you were just petting his back and you got kind of near his butt, he would just flip out.
Mm.
He's a shelter dog, so something most likely happened horrible to him. But like, you know, just if you get anywhere near it, just would freak out.
Yeah,
yes. I don't understand the people that push their dogs in a stroller. I'm sorry. I don't get it. I don't get it.
Diapers are okay though, right?
Yeah, diapers are fine.
Okay, good.
Also, you should not have an overweight dog.
No.
An overweight dog or cat is your fault.
Yeah, but to be honest, overweight cats
make
are
the best internet pictures. They make the best, like, lasagna. You put captions on them.
Yeah, but it's hard because you see an overweight cat and you feel bad and adorable. This thing, you're like, oh.
I mean, my vet yelled at me because Bamboo was 1.5 pounds overweight. And I'm like, it's 1.5 pounds.
But percentage-wise,
I'm like, what do you think about me?
Don't get me started.
But, you know, but I took it seriously. I had to stop giving him the treats.
Then you found out your vet's doing a bunch of coke in the back office, and he's just freaking out and yelling at people. This dog is 3 ounces overweight.
I used to go to a vet on Figueroa when I was living in Highland Park, and at the vet, they would play on a loop Milo and Otis. And at first, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool, something to watch. And then I realized how horrible it is, because there's so many dogs and cats killed on the set of Milo and Otis when they were in the making of that movie.
Is that true?
What? Yeah, they went through multiple versions of both of those animals because they kept on dying.
Oh, that's awful.
And yeah, and so it's so weird.
Why are they dying?
Because, well, have you seen the movie in a long time?
No.
It's, if you watch it.
I don't think I ever watched it.
It's like, you know, they end up in a box and the box is going down a river and then, you know.
It's like a road trip movie, yeah. but with a pug and another.
And a little orange tabby, I think it is. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you realize, you're watching, you're like, oh, this is such a fun adventure. But then you realize how much horrible situations and like scary situations.
Do they talk about that in the DVD commentary?
Yeah, yeah. So this is Milo 3.
Milo 3.
And Otis 5?
It sucks. Oh, that really sucks.
We did all sit down and watch Marley and Me together.
I refuse to watch that movie. I don't think I can do it either.
I don't think I can do it either.
And I'll tell you, Bamboo and Sugar, they don't normally pay attention to the TV. They were glued to it. They were just like staring at it.
Did they start crying at the end?
Yeah, and they were like sitting on top of me, and I house sit a lot of dogs, and I had a giant golden doodle that was at the house, and I basically run a kennel out of my house, and it's free. If you're going away, you don't know where to put your dog. Nice. Give him to me.
I travel a lot.
That's the best kind, where you just get to have it for a bit.
And so I had this golden doodle like snuggled up next to me and my two, and we were all staring at the screen and we're bawling our eyes out, and I think it was the night before we started production on No Ordinary Family, and I show up on the first day with like swollen eyes, and I'm still crying, and I'm like, I just saw the worst movie last night. It really upset me. And everyone's like, what is it? And I'm like, Marley and Me. And the whole crew was like, oh dude, you shouldn't watch that film.
Yeah. I was talking to a friend. She puts that up. She's like, there's a couple movies I'll never watch again, just because she can't handle it. It's Dancer in the Dark. She's like, it's a great movie, I'll never watch it again. Requiem for a Dream, loved it, never want to watch it again. Marley and Me, loved it, never want to watch it again. Yeah, she puts it up there with those movies.
I don't think I can do it. I even was pretty upset by that that scene in Lost where Walt's going away on the boat and the dog jumps in and he's trying to catch up to the water. I was like, keep swimming, buddy.
That was the worst.
Just keep swimming.
And all those, oh man, all the images from like Japan, all the dogs finding their owners in Japan. Those are tearing me apart.
I guess they're still in that town where the nuclear reactor is. I guess there's all the house pets were left behind, and the whole town's been evacuated and. They're starving, basically.
Yeah.
And there's nothing they're not letting anybody come back in.
Possibly.
Yeah.
I mean, it might actually be a humane thing. Especially because, you know, like you watch any of those specials, like Life After People, and then the animals would find our food in the kitchens. They're like, I don't know, like how these domesticated animals would really do.
There's a really serious dog problem in Detroit. I don't know if you saw that. There was a viral YouTube video. Because of all the abandoned buildings, because the economy is pretty much crap there, there's a lot of abandoned buildings and a lot of pets left behind and abandoned dogs, and they're basically just becoming like wild animals because no one's taking care of them and they have to survive. And there's a really very disturbing video that I watched, and I can't even tell you what it was that I saw that was so upsetting. But, I mean, the dog was just being a dog and trying to survive, but... you know, the city isn't going to, they haven't really taken, they haven't done anything.
Right.
As far as I know.
Yeah.
That's what's 3 weeks
I think
ago.
Weird for
states.
Detroit.
They seem so on top of the
guys. Once RoboCop gets there, everything's going to be okay.
I think there's some things being put together with neighboring states are going in and taking some of the dogs and putting them in their kennels and trying to kind of the same thing they did in after Hurricane Katrina.
Where, right.
That's actually after Hurricane Katrina is when I started donating regularly to the ASPCA,
right.
Where it's you know, just they help find these dogs that are just their owners are gone or they're just misplaced, and they go and give them new homes and stuff like that. It's a kind
I'm
of
hosting
relocation.
A poker tournament for the Nevada ASPCA on May 21st.
Oh, cool!
Up in Reno.
Oh, that's great.
So nice. If anybody, you know. Any listeners want to come?
You guys want to come?
Are there
to
any listeners?
You know what they say about Reno? It's near Lake Tahoe.
I've never been.
You haven't been to Reno?
Lake Tahoe? Never been to Reno.
Oh, Reno is a place.
It's a place. It's a place for the people. You know what? It'll be fun because you'll get to see the nice. Like they'll take you into all the nice parts. And,
yeah, I don't play poker, so I hope they're not expecting me to play. Yeah, yeah.
You know what may happen now because of this podcast? People might come up to you with barf bags and be like, "Will you sign my barf bag?" Yeah. Because it's like a super inside joke.
Yeah, but the ASPCA is amazing. And then there's also Best Friends Animal Network organization, and they do wonderful things too. They take in a lot of senior dogs. And I had fostered two senior dogs for a while. I had two senior labs, and I found them both homes, but I had taken them in, and that was hard. I mean, it was hard to think that their owners, you know, didn't want to take care of them anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting how... I don't know. It's if people, these animals that aren't being taken care of, it's because their owners aren't taking care of themselves.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, we domesticated the animal. I mean, we domesticated dogs and cats, you know, so they rely on us. They're not wild animals. I mean, they rely on us to care for them. We have a social responsibility.
Cats don't want us.
No, they don't.
They want us when they want us.
Yeah,
yeah, but you know, when you look back, you know, when you look back at the... when you look back at sort of hominid development and what Neanderthals and Homo sapiens branching off, and then you realize like, oh yes, Homo sapiens were allowed to thrive because we formed the symbiotic relationship with dogs,
yeah.
we would create packs with them, and they would hunt for us when we couldn't get food, and
right.
We exist now largely because of the relationship we had with dogs.
Yeah. Yes.
So let's give back. Come on, Detroit.
I know. Sure. Let's take care
get
of
get off your
right
grimy now ass and get some dogs out
let's
to people.
Get that RoboCop statue built. And then we'll take care of the dogs.
Yeah.
You know what I wanted to ask was the difference between, just shifting gears, the Dexter set versus the Buffy set. The Dexter set seems like it might have been a very serious place.
It was a very serious place.
Was there any screwing around, or was anyone? I've heard, and I don't. I mean, not in any bad way, but I've heard Michael C. Hall is very like, very serious.
You know what is interesting? Because all the actors came from New York, and were very like theater actors, and I was the only like TV actor in the group, and I'm silly and fun, and I had to. I had to watch my silliness. Although it's part of my process on set is to have fun and be silly, because I can be like laughing and joking around. You can yell action. I can burst into tears. I'm psychotic like that. but when I'm joking around, it means I'm relaxed. And so that's part of me staying relaxed. And, you know, and everybody else worked very differently.
They had to lead up to
just very serious. Yeah. so I would, you know, go in the corner and joke around with the crew.
Nice.
And then, you know. But it was also, you know, I respected their process. They respected the fact that it was my process was to kind of have that loose, fun energy. So I could then burst into tears and be an emotional basket case.
Did you get to hang out with John Lithgow?
I never got to work with
him. Because you guys
were
never in any of the same scenes.
No. Yeah. I thought I was in the clear. I had no clue I was being killed. I thought.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I thought if I don't have a scene with him, that means I'm fine. We knew there was some big ending that they, you know, had talked about.
Spoiler alert.
That episode messed me up.
Messed me up, too.
Yeah. and me, too, because that was just the old... Oh, I should probably... I'll put a spoiler alert in the beginning of the thing.
Oh,
just the old switcheroo where it ends and you're like, what the fuck? I think I shouted at the television.
I did. I stood up. I was like, fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck. And, it's, you know,
and then we went around to the back of the set to see if you were okay.
Yeah, exactly.
And you weren't there.
You weren't there.
I wasn't there. You know, it was really tough. I actually, you know, I only found out an hour before they put out the script. And was shocked. That I was losing my job.
and that's the shittiest part about as fun as this business can be, you never feel a sense. Like I always wonder, like,
no, you never have a sense
on
of
Seinfeld.
Security.
How far in before everyone was like, you know what, we're gonna be fine. Like it must have been like 5 seasons.
Yes.
Because you just never
when they went into syndication.
You're like, now we're gonna be okay. Yeah. I mean, how do you get around that emotionally? Is it just a process you go through, or do you just accept it like easily?
Drinks. no, I mean, you know, it was you know, because it was so shocking to me. I mean, it was like a death in the family. I mean, that's what it felt like. Like I loved Rita. I absolutely loved her. And so I felt that, you know, I felt like I was defending her life in the room when they told me. I was throwing everybody else under the bus. I'm like, there's 5 cops standing around that do nothing. I just had a baby.
You guys, Rita just got her life together.
Yeah. Come on. Like, I mean, you can't.
She's been dating scumbags her whole life. Yeah. She finally gets her head on her shoulders and you cut it off.
Yeah, I'm like, what about one of the cops? They're not doing anything.
did you show up at the table read and you're like, okay, guys, where's the real script? Really funny.
Yeah, no, I didn't go to the table read for that script.
Oh, no.
That was part of my process. It was really difficult. But you know, I gave myself that evening. I gathered up all my close friends. We went to Merrick's. We had a lot of margaritas, mm-hmm. and then the next day I was like, okay, time to move on. You know, but it was hard. It was hard. I had to keep it a secret for a long time, for about 2.5 months. I wasn't allowed to tell anybody.
And people are asking you how the show's going. You're like, it's great.
And I had a movie coming out at the time. I had Boondock Saints 2 that was premiering. Mm-hmm. And so I was doing all this press and like,
everyone keeps asking about
trying to hold it together and be like, you know, it's going to be great. Wait till you see the ending. It's a game changer. Like, you know, and like being fun and cool with it. But then at the same time, I was going on auditions. But they had to see me secretly. Oh. But I'd be going into rooms with producers, and they'd be like, why are you here? And I'm like, I'm not allowed to tell you, but I'm here. And they're like, what happens? And I'm like, I can't tell you, but there's a reason why I'm here. So it was it was really difficult. And but once it aired, there was this, like, I had this fear that nobody was going to care, really, because season 4, Rita kind of became a nemesis to a serial killer. Like, mm-hmm. a housewife became a nemesis to a serial killer. And there was a lot of Rita hate online. And so I really thought, like, oh, wow, maybe the audience isn't going to care. Like, maybe it's not going to be shocking. Maybe they're going to be excited. And so I had all that nervous tension leading up to it. And The night after it aired, I went out to dinner in West Hollywood, and I walked into this restaurant, and literally there was like a gasp, and then people started coming up to me and were hugging me and were crying.
Oh my gosh!
And they're like, "You're alive!" And I'm like, "It's just a show.
I'm an actor.
They didn't really kill me. That'd be weird. That would be reality TV then.
A snuff film."
And like, you know, so it was And for months after, and even now to this day, like, I get people coming up and wanting to hug me and like needing that. Like, it's almost like they needed closure. And that's why I went back for the beginning of season 5, was to give not only myself closure because it was so abrupt, but to also hopefully give the audience some sort of closure with that image and helping them move on.
Yeah.
You know, but I get a lot of hugs. I get a lot of free drinks.
There you go.
I do. I know you don't drink it. I sound like an alcoholic.
No, not at all. No, not to, listen, I'm not one of those creepy ex-drinkers who's like, is that wine in your hand? You got a problem. Like, I think, listen, I always say drinking is like pouring smiles on your brain. Like, if you can do it, then great. I think that's great.
I get, like, you know, like, I was in New York this past month, and And it seemed like every waiter and waitress was a Dexter fan, and they'd all comp me a drink.
Nice.
And I was like, score.
That's the way to do it.
Well, I think, I mean, it seems like, are you in a position, maybe you can't talk about this, are you in a position with your show now where you can go on auditions again, or are you not going on auditions again?
I did a pilot for CBS.
You did?
I did.
What was it? Can you talk about it?
Yeah, it's called The Untitled Susanna Grant Project.
Okay.
And it was directed by Jonathan Demme.
Oh, wow.
And Susanna Grant, she wrote Aaron Brockovich.
Okay.
And it's with Patrick Wilson.
Oh, my God. He's so great.
Amazing. And Jennifer Ely, who she played Jeffrey Rush's wife in The King's Speech. Now, mm-hmm. as I say that, since you didn't see it, you don't know who I'm talking about. but she won a Tony Award. She's an amazing actress. Once again, it's all New York actors and me. I play Patrick's sister. And it's a supernatural medical drama.
I love it.
Yeah, it's really cool. And I play a hippie, like this kind of very granola hippie. I'm into crystal healing and shamans, and that's about all I can say, but it's fun. It was a great experience. I spent the last month in New York shooting it. So,
oh, that's awesome.
So, you know, ultimately, if No Ordinary Family gets picked up, I will go back on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it just seemed that we're not.
Yeah.
But
I still have my hopes.
I still hope that it does. I mean, I loved working on the show, and I loved playing Stephanie Powell and working with our amazing cast. So I still hope.
Oh yeah, because you work with Autumn Reeser too,
yes.
Who I know from doing. We do this thing called Thrilling Adventure Hour, which is like,
yes,
a live radio play.
Yes.
And she's phenomenal in that.
Yes.
She does a really great Amelia Earhart. It's a really great voice. It's so much fun. Well, I hope your show comes back.
But I feel like
you're in the machine. Like, you will work. You know, like, you're gonna work.
I don't know. Knock on wood.
You're gonna work.
I still think at the end of every job, it's the last time I'll ever work. I still have that.
That's because in this business, we're conditioned to flinch every time. Like, I mean, we become these weird, we develop this weird sort of abused wife relationship with the business where you're like, don't hit me.
Yeah,
like whenever someone raises their hand or like starts petting us too closely to our butts, like your dog friend. But from my point of view, it seems like Julie Benz is going to be A-okay. She's in the machine. She's great. You're just going to keep doing stuff.
I hope. I mean, you know, like I said, you never know. Right now, the train's moving, and I'm enjoying every moment of it. And, you know, I have no life. So all I do is work, and that's, you know, the price you pay when the train's moving.
Yeah.
You know, I'll have a life down the line. But, you know, it's, you just never know. I mean, I've been an actor now 26 years.
Sweet.
So I've had ups and I've had downs.
Yeah.
And I've had ups again. And I hope I never have another down. But, you know, I'm prepared.
Well,
I have my, like, you know how you're supposed to have your earthquake prepared?
Yes.
I have my, like, non-working actor preparedness kit.
What is in that kit?
Money.
a pile of gold for currency, unless money gets abolished in some way.
And alcohol.
Yeah,
money.
It's a bottle of tequila and fucking a pile of cash.
And some possible hobbies you can fill up your time with.
Possible Hobbies is a good name for a book.
Oh, that is a great name for a book or a band.
Or a band, yeah.
Possible Hobbies. Our first song is Noodle Stories.
Noodle Stories.
Yeah, that's great. I love that you came on the show so willingly, and
thank you.
Appreciate. And again, I apologize for the way that it all happened.
For stalking me.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little bit
for
stalky.
Watching me get a pat down. Which, by the way, I'm always offended when they don't pat me down.
Oh, really? Well, you're not going through the machines now where you have to put your hands in the diamond shape and then they can see.
They see everything.
Everything. I'm going to start writing stuff on my parts. And then just see if I get weird looks as I go through, like, hey, a sport or whatever, and just write weird stuff if they can read it.
I don't think they can read stuff, but they can see if you had work done.
The guy had a second penis put in. Yeah, just for you guys.
Maybe they could also tell if maybe like a surgeon left a pair of scissors inside of you.
Yes,
you
know, that'd be helpful. Exactly. That'd be really like one helpful. Of those weird medical anomaly websites where they're like, there seems to be a bottle of cheese whiz lodged up there. That's why I keep setting off the metal detector. I wish you the best. Thank you so much for coming on. Julie Benz on Twitter at Julie Benz. And we'll keep following you. And then, you know, like you're welcome to, if you want to come back on in 6 months or whatever, or 8 months, and check in and see what you're up to.
Awesome.
I would love
to. You should invite me.
I will. I will.
Now that you know me.
Now that I know you and now I know the proper way to do that.
Have you had Autumn on since you know Autumn?
I've not had Autumn on yet, and I absolutely want to have her on.
You should have her on.
Yeah, I will. I will have Autumn on.
You should have Romany on. Do you know Romany Malco?
Yes! You know what? Romany and I hung out in... I was performing at South by Southwest, and Romany was down there.
He is
a firecracker, that guy.
He is. And he'll come in and do Tijuana Jackson.
Yes. Yes, I will. We will definitely have Romany Malco on.
You have to have him on.
He was great.
Yes.
You just reminded me that I need to have him on, so we will.
And if he's not sure, have him call me.
I already asked him to come on, and he already agreed.
Okay.
So... I think that's an oral contract.
Okay.
I think I could sue him legally.
Legally, yes.
For if he doesn't make an appearance on the podcast. Yeah. But I think he will. I think he will.
I think he will too.
He's great. All right, cool. Thank you so much, Julie Benz.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye.
All right.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast was brought to you by GoToMeeting, the easiest, most reliable online meeting service. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com and enter the promo code Nerdist.